You're listening to Law and Justice on UCC 98.3 FM. Next up, I have an interview with Professor Jonathan Todres from the Georgia State University College of Law. He works in the Center for Law, Health and Society and is currently a Fulbright Scholar at the UCC Law School. Jonathan spoke to me about his current major research interest, which is in human rights in children's literature, a fascinating topic, and how we can use imagination to convey core human rights messages to children and indeed the parents or adults reading the stories to them.
Most of my work is on children's rights issues. I've done a lot of work for many years on child trafficking and related forms of child exploitation. In recent years, I've shifted focus a little bit. And I've done a lot on human rights education. And in particular, I'm interested in thinking about human rights education in spaces that children already inhabit. And the one area that I'm focused on now and have been for a few years is human rights education, looking at children's literature. So what are the human rights discourses in the books that children read and have read to them? You can think about Dr. Seuss's Horton Hears a Who, for example. That iconic line in that book is, "A person's a person, no matter how small." Mm. That's a better articulation of foundational children's rights and human rights principles than any legal philosopher or scholar has come up with in the last 100 years that I'm aware of. A person's a person, no matter how small, covers equality, human dignity, non-discrimination.
Mm. Being seen really and heard, I guess.
Being seen and heard. Yeah. And that's really Horton Hears a Who. If people recall the story, Horton the elephant finds a small people that aren't visible to the naked eye, and he takes it upon himself to protect them, and he is your quintessential human rights defender.
Yeah.
But what's wonderful about the story is, although he goes to great lengths to save the Whos, it's really the Whos themselves, and in particular the smallest of the small, as Dr. Seuss writes, Jojo with his yo-yo. It's only when the smallest of the small is heard that the Whos as a people are saved. And that's an extraordinary message to young children, that the smallest voices, the smallest individuals should be heard as much as anyone.
And so are you finding it easy to locate sources where rights are being taught to children? Are children's books full of them, I suppose, is the question.
Absolutely. I don't have enough time and to catch up to all the sources. And in some respects, it's a huge project. I mean, if you think globally, the books that are out there for children, there's seemingly no end. Of course, not every story, not every book is a human rights book, and some of them are not explicitly so, but they have sort of this embedded message, and in ways that I think are really wonderful for children. What we found when I've done some research on this is, and read to groups of children, is it's the stories that have a compelling narrative, where the story is foregrounded, not the lesson. Mm. So it's not that sort of overly simplistic children's book that's hitting you over the head with this very obvious lesson. You find that kids don't want to read those over and over again. But the stories that have a genuine story, and that's what was so effective about Dr. Seuss, there was a wonderful narrative that children gravitated towards. And as they read Dr. Seuss, they also heard about and had a chance to explore what does it mean when one character treats another character unfairly. Do they have a right to stand up for themselves? Mm. And should they? And should they stand up for others? And so I think there are an endless number of stories, and not all of them are positive. You know, one of the contrasts we see is, if people remember Peter Rabbit, Beatrix Potter's Peter Rabbit, it's a wonderful story in many respects, but it's also a story in which no child has a voice. The only voices are the narrator, Peter's mother, and then Mr. McGregor, who seeks to kill Peter for trespassing or possibly eating a few vegetables.
Is that right? Okay, yeah.
That's a sort of human rights lens on it, perhaps.
Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay, and so, I mean, in the States, I know there's quite a big law and literature school. Is there an equally large human rights and literature movement, or are you out on your own? Is it growing?
Well, in fairness, in some respects, I feel a little bit on my own, even in the States, because most of the law and literature movement is really not about children's literature. There's relatively little focus on that. You do find some wonderful scholarly work being done by children's literature scholars, but that tends to be less about human rights law. Since I've been here at UCC and in Ireland, I found this wonderful human rights community, and there are a lot of people who are really interested in how children learn about their rights, maybe not thinking about it through children's literature, but there's a lot of work being done on human rights education in a way that, in some respects, is really much further along than we are in the United States. And so that's really exciting to be a part of. And one of the wonderful things about a Fulbright is you get to step back and think about what are all the possible connections and paths of my research. And so I've met people at UCC at the Glucksman Gallery and other people in the arts, and I'm excited to think about those spaces. How could visual arts be a space for human rights education? We can think about it, you know, where do children spend their time? Sports. Sports teaches some really important human rights lessons too, potentially.
Yeah, fairness and bodily fairness integrity.
And it overcomes discrimination and stigma and bias often because your teammates are your teammates wherever they come from, whatever they look like. If they're different from you or similar, they are your teammates and you bond with them. And that has a sort of equalizing impact and lessons for children that are really powerful. One of the really exciting things about children's literature, though, is the impact it has. Fiction gets ingrained in us in a way that other experiences do not. And you can ask students, I ask my law students sometimes about something they've read last week for class, and they're sort of, they remember some, but not all. You ask them about their favorite children's book, and their faces light up, and there's a different experience.
Like children again themselves.
It's ingrained in a really powerful way. And the exciting thing about children's literature is it's not just, so many of the stories don't just talk about children's own rights, but they have characters who are acting on behalf of not just themselves but others. So I'll give you one other Seuss example. In Yertle the Turtle, it's Mac at the bottom of the stack who articulates that down here we have rights, but he always uses the collective pronoun. That we have rights. It's not just about him, but it's about the rights of others who are suffering. In Click Clack Moo, Cows That Type, the cows in the barn are cold at night and they want electric blankets, so they type messages to the farmer, and which is a wonderful story that your kids can get into. But they don't just think about their own comfort or their own right to an adequate standard of living, as we'd say in the human rights world, but they also, the hens are cold too, and so they advocate for blankets and better conditions for the hens as well. And
so there's a solidarity with others.
And recognizing that our rights are connected with the rights of others.
That whole interconnectedness. And so you're a dad with two small children and clearly immersed in reading children's literature, I suppose, all the time anyway. Do you think that for adults, the parents who are reading stories, that they as well can be transported and whether they are consciously thinking about human rights or not, they're being brought into tales about right and wrong or morals, how to treat people properly?
Absolutely. And I think that it's important we need to think more about that adult experience in reading with children, whether it's teachers or it's parents. They are the sort of primary guides for children. And we all read to our children and make great efforts to sort of step back and let children have their own experience in this safe, imaginative world of literature. But we also sometimes prompt them with questions. What did you think of this character? Did you like this? Why did you like the story? And sometimes that pushes children in different directions. So I think we have to be aware of our role, and I think more attention needs to be paid and to what are adults doing? Do they translate rights in some ways for children in a very positive way? Or are some grown-ups making the choice to sort of marginalize those messages in a way that isn't productive for children in terms of learning about their rights and the rights of others? The story of Ferdinand by Munro Leaf, it's a story about a bull who ends up growing up to be the biggest, strongest bull, but he doesn't want to fight. He simply wants to sit and just smell the flowers. And it's this remarkable story. One might look at it and think, oh, this is a pacifist message. But when we've read to young children and also to teenagers, we read to kids as young as 5 and then kids as old as 17. And when we read to them, what they saw it as, across the board, this is an identity rights book. This is a story about Ferdinand being who he wants to be and really Ferdinand being who he really is. And so that story, and this is one of the wonderful things about children's literature, is it is this safe space where young people can explore really complex issues. And so when we read this to children, they were able to sort of have this experience of following this character, this bull who grows up and says, this is who I really am. I'm not a fighter. They were, you know, the kids related it to their lives and shared sort of, this is who I want to be, and this is whether I think it's fair or not. Other people want me to be a certain way. Yeah. But and they grappled with those really complex issues in a way that children's literature really facilitates that discussion and facilitates that exploring. And that's really exciting to me.
So you do a lot of reading with kids then. Is this part of the project?
So part of the project, the sort of first phase was to also, we wanted to hear from children and not just say, okay, this is what, you know, two adults think, or three adults. This is what a group of adults read this story and this is what we get out of the book. We wanted to validate our sort of interpretation by saying, what do young people think too?
That's great.
And we also wanted to sort of tie back to children's rights law, which one of the cornerstones of children's rights law is that children have a right to participate, a right to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so it would have been strange for us to write a book about what the messages in children's literature and never hear from children as
true.
Part of that. And so we didn't want to make that mistake. We wanted to be sure that children are heard. And what they said really affirmed what we were thinking, that there were really powerful messages mm-hmm. in many children's books. And that children are already seeing these messages. Mm. This isn't so much, do we as adults want to teach kids about the messages there?
Okay.
It's really about, this conversation is happening, sometimes in the minds of children, sometimes with their peers.
Yeah.
And the question is whether we as adults want to participate and engage children in that discussion.
Fascinating.